You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 200 of the Earth Station DCU! Tonight we're going to talk Batman number 96, Dark Knights, Death Metal, Legends of the Dark Knight number 1, Far Sector number 7, Justice League number 50, Strange Adventures number 4, The Terrifics number 29, Young Justice number 17, Stargirl season 1 episode 11, Shining Knight, and Doom Patrol season 2 episode 7, Doom Patrol. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. Actually, before we talk about DC news, let's acknowledge the fact we're at episode 200, because it's hard to believe that we're there.
That's crazy. It sometimes it kind of hits me, like when we're talking about reviewing certain comics, and I'm like, oh yeah, this story, and in my head that happened just recently, and I realized that some of those comics that we reviewed were years ago at this point. That's crazy, man. I can't believe we've hit 200.
I know, me either. All right, first up for DC news, DC Fandom teaser trailer released. And it was short, but it was kind of awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what this looks like. I hope it'll be something that's kind of interesting and fun for fans to check out.
Yeah, cuz we need that right now.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, up next for DC News, Rocksteady Studios has posted a teaser for a Suicide Squad game announced on August 22nd at DC's Virtual Fandom event.
I'm really excited to see what the game is going to be like. I would assume that you would potentially be able to control different characters. For people who don't know, this is the same studio that made the Batman Arkham games, which are very good. I would say probably one of the kind of marquee superhero video games that's been made series. So it's pretty exciting. And the interesting thing too, at least in the teaser poster that I saw, it was Superman that was on the poster. So that's really kind of interesting. So is he going to be, I wouldn't say the antagonist necessarily, but in terms of like through the lens of the Suicide Squad, is he the antagonist? That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. And I've never played the Batman Arkham game, so I don't know anything about it. But I've seen things about it, so I know it was a very popular game.
Yeah, I mean, it's especially the second one in the series, Arkham City, was the one that really kind of. I mean, the first one was certainly popular, but the second one really was the one that kind of catapulted them. It's just got like kind of what you would want in a Batman game. Like you're just kind of doing all the things you'd want to be able to do as Batman. It just felt like they understood, like you've got combat, but you're also solving mysteries and puzzles and stuff like that. So I'm very, very, very curious to see what this game's going to look like. Hopefully it's as good as the other stuff they've put out.
What platforms was that Batman Arkham game on?
I think both Xbox and PlayStation, and I'm pretty sure PC. Honestly, actually, I think one of them got ported to the Switch, too.
Oh, really?
I believe so. I believe it got ported. It's fair. I mean, there's been three or four games. I think four games in the series. And I think the first one or two, I think, have been ported onto most consoles.
I might have to check out that game and hijack one of my kids' consoles. All right, and moving on to our last bit of DC news. There's massive layoffs at Warner Brothers.
Yeah, so the big ones that we know for sure are the guys that were in charge of launching HBO Max. I'm not surprised necessarily that they would be the ones getting. I'm not saying that they deserve it, but that has certainly not been the launch that they wanted for the app. And whether that's their fault, whether that's the fault of Roku and Amazon playing hardball with them, regardless, they're not on all of the possible streaming devices that they should be on. That's rough in the first place. And then it just hasn't generated the buzz that you know that they would like. That being said, it is I have the app. I do like it. Like, it is good. It's just, you know, if you've got, like, we have a Roku TV, and it would be nice to just be able to go through that. Now, we can still cast it onto our TV, so it's not that big of a deal, but it's still, it's one of those things. It's like, come on. There are other people that maybe that's not an option, and they are, you know, that's what's preventing them from getting it. So I am not surprised that they would necessarily get the axe, but then also, clearly, this is, I mean, it's not just those are the big names that are getting cut, but the implication with this is there's going to be a lot of people losing their job, which, again, you know, we're thinking about where a lot of companies are at. That is also not surprising. But one thing that did, the memo that was sent out, I'm assuming, to most employees that work for them, is unbelievable. It's one of the most insulting business speak things I've ever read. The first, like, three paragraphs are talking about how they're missionaries and they're going to succeed, and, like, their mission to spread this view and whatever to the world. It's so, and it's just like a bunch of gobbledygook talking about how great they are. And the guy that's writing this, the new CEO of the company, has only been there 3 months. So he's not even been there that long. And he's talking about, like, how great of a job they're doing and blah, 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 blah. By the way, we're going to fire everybody. Like, right towards the end, and then it's just like, oh, and I'm sorry about that. It's just, I can't tell you how unbelievably pissed off I would be if I was an employee and I was reading that. I'd be like, are you kidding me? Just like, don't BS me for a page and then be like, by the way, you're fired. Just do it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Jeez.
I encourage people to read the memo, to be honest with you, or at least skim it, because I understand not wanting to read the whole thing, but It's garbage. It is hot garbage. It's just such a, in my opinion, such an insulting way to inform. Like, not everybody receiving the memo is getting fired necessarily. They're just informing people that this is coming down the pipeline pretty soon. It's just, come on, man. I know that that's probably status quo for a lot of, like, you know, large business memos and stuff, but come on.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
We are the Cigar Nerds Podcast. Do you like cigars? Great! We review cigars while talking about movies, TV shows, science, and pop culture news. What? You don't like cigars? Great! Because we also talk about science, movies, TV shows, and whatever's going on in the news. It's what we do. We smoke cigars, and we know things. Find us on CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're also on the ESO Network.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers. 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 We got spoilers. Spoilers for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Batman number 96. So, the issue opens up to a Gotham City years from now that seems to be technologically in tune with Batman. We see a kid on the street get a bat signal on his phone that keeps him from getting run over by Mr. Freeze's van. Batman shows up and battles Mr. Freeze and his two sons with not too much effort. When Bruce returns home to the Batcave, we find out this has been the first time he's been out as Batman for a month. But we find out it's all a dream, and the opening sequence kind of reminded me of the Superman issue for The Man Who Has Everything. I don't know what you thought about that, but that's what that made me think of.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good comparison, yeah. Where you're kind of getting like this perfect dream world.
Yeah, because everything's running smoothly for Batman. It's like his ideal life.
And I think what's interesting is that I think it plays out initially as if it's something that you could actually be reading more so than this. Like, because like the Superman one, right? You know right away something's wrong because he's on Krypton.
Right.
Whereas with this one, it's not immediately, like, it's only like, it's pretty quick, but you don't immediately know that Alfred's alive. And it's not till you see that you're like, wait a second, that's not right.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I found that kind of interesting for a second, because it was kind of like, maybe he is trying to show you, like, projecting. It would never come to pass because comics, that'll never work, right? But
right.
in his vision, at least, what 5 years from now would look like with Batman. And it was, you know, it was a couple pages in, you're like, oh, okay. I see where this is at. Alfred can't be alive.
All right. Well, when Batman wakes up from his bout with Punchline's drug, it's been 3 days, and Harley Quinn has been watching over him. And she doesn't look very good herself. Harley explains what kind of chaos the city is in, and we find out that Punchline has been running Joker's gang from the Wayne building at the Tri-Corner Yards. And his gang has grown exponentially because the Joker has been paying big money for others to join his gang. Plus, he has all sorts of new Joker toys for them to play with. We see the Underbroker and his army of lawyers are at City Hall making sure the city stays paralyzed and that the cops are staying clear of the action. And we also find out the Joker is up to something different. He's bought up all the ad time in Gotham, online videos, television, literally every spot. And he's playing a video over and over about a man tied up with the mark of Zorro cut in his face. And he's reading a note from the Joker about the mark of Zorro playing at the Monarch Theater and everywhere else. And he's paying $10,000 for people to see it opening night. Now, even though Punchline's drug is still in his system, and he's still hallucinating, and still talking to Alfred, Batman rushes to the Monarch Theater where he finds an audience of people who were at one time killed by the Joker. And we see Joker uses that green gas or whatever it is to raise the dead bodies with whatever method he's using into, like, zombies or something. Which I'm still waiting for them to explain.
Yeah, I agree. I'm almost wondering if we are going to get an explanation for that, though. I feel like he's just sort of thrown it out there and been like, this is a thing. You just have to accept that it exists.
I can see him doing that, too.
The story overall was pretty good. I had a couple things I would have liked more on how Harley Quinn survived. Like, I don't need the full story, but they sort of really hand-waved a pretty serious injury. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know, like, what I mean, you mean.
I'm not saying it's impossible to survive that, but not easy given the situation as it presented itself. And it's sort of just like, yeah, I'm Harley Quinn, it's fine. Which I can accept. I honestly, Drew, I can accept that. I just wanted a little bit more information there. And then I guess it's sort of a problem really with any solo superhero book. But when you get, like, how would no other hero have intervened at this point?
I know. We should have seen the Bat family at least show up.
And I wonder if some of the explanations for this would be shown in the side titles. But based on what we've read so far, I don't know that they will, because none of them that we've read so far seem to be on the same page. They're like, oh, there's a Joker story happening, so we're going to write that. But none of them seem to actually be on, you know what I mean? Like, telling the same story. They're just like, oh, the Joker's around. There's nothing to do with the Joker story that's being told, but here's a Joker story. So I don't know.
I have to say, I have my disappointment in the editorial team for that. If Denny O'Neill was the editor, they would have all been tied together in a much better story. I just have to throw that out there. They did.
Well, okay. See, but this is interesting because just somewhat recently, I don't know if it's the current writer of Batgirl or a recent writer on Batgirl, there was a little mini controversy because she was talking about how there was like a Bat Summit, so to speak, like all the Bat writers got together to talk about the plans for the book, and she wasn't invited to it. But they basically like didn't care to include her or the Batgirl character.
And that is odd.
Well, I mean, you know, it kind of ties into a lot of the Boys Club stuff that we've been seeing a lot of. So that was really the context it was being shown in. Mm.
That's disappointing.
Well, and I will say that I'm not involved, so I don't know the full story. So, it is what it is. So in theory, they should be on the same – you know what I'm saying? Given that, and again, we don't know the full context, but you know something like that happened. How, like, they just don't seem like they're on the same page.
They don't. They really don't. Reading some of the other titles, Nightwing and Batgirl, Detective Comics, that just doesn't feel like they're on the same page.
And then the fact that Tom King's miniseries was initially supposed to remain in continuity, and then all of a sudden it wasn't. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
And not that I'm necessarily complaining about that, but it kind of shows the sort of mess. That's a sort of sloppy thing that I think probably shouldn't happen on a well-run team.
Right.
So, yeah. Anyway, like I said, the story I'm interested in. I enjoyed. There was just a few things. Like, I would like more context to how – I just don't – like I said – it's a problem, honestly, with all solo superhero books where you create – which exists in a larger universe where you create a problem which seems somewhat inexplicable that nobody else would get involved in. And I agree with you. I feel like that problem could probably be solved by showing the other Bat family members. And maybe we will see that, but we haven't yet. So I don't know. I just don't know. The broader picture, because again, this is supposed to be at least a mini Bat event. I feel like it hasn't really felt like that. It feels like it's a big Batman story to its credit, but it feels like it's a big Batman story that is only tangentially affecting the other titles.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll just have to see what happens as the story unfolds, because I hope we get some of the Bat family in this, and they're just not in the side stories. We need them in the main title here.
I am very surprised, to be honest with you, Drew. I'm surprised we haven't got – I thought we would get to that already. I thought, and I think you thought this too, that they were going to factor fairly heavily into the story. And it has been a pure Batman story so far.
It has. And I've been kind of disappointed about that.
Some people might enjoy that. Personally, for me, I would want to see more of the Bat family. Maybe – I don't know. Maybe this is appeals to other Bat fans. That's totally their prerogative. That's definitely a subjective thing. But – for me, I would certainly want more of the Bat family involved in the story going forward.
And I have to agree with you on that. That would be my take on it, too. I love the extended Bat family. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Dark Knight's Death Metal, Legends of the Dark Knight, number one. In the first story about the Dark Knight, we got an overview of his origin and how he became the Batman Who Laughs. His motivation after the fall of Barbados, and his future plans, which is to create his own multiverse to devour every other multiverse. That story was okay. We got a second story, which was the origin of the Robin King. We get to see a Bruce Wayne who is the opposite of the Bruce Wayne we know. He's not a hero, but a villain, and a very disturbed boy who has the makings of a serial killer. After those two stories, man, this was terrible.
What I think is interesting, and I don't necessarily disagree with you on that, is that the first two, in my opinion, are trying to tell, I think, what we were expecting from this book, which is like serious, what if Batman was evil in this way stories, and what if Batman was evil in this way story. And then all of the other ones in it were all in on a different joke, if that makes sense. Like, all the other ones were, I thought, extremely tongue-in-cheek, that were like, oh, what if Batman was evil like this? If that makes sense. Like, they're like almost making fun of they legitimately felt to me like they were making fun of the concept, and I actually kind of liked that, if I'm being honest.
I'm glad you like it. I thought they were just terrible stories. Like, the B-Rex story was, I thought, a waste of two pages.
Again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they were masterpieces. A lot of them were like you said, bizarrely short. They were just, they started to tell a story and then they were just like the end. But I don't know if it's intentional or not. I'm just trying to think of the overall theme of this Dark Knight story has been sort of like over the top ridiculousness. And aside from the first two, the rest of the stories read to me as like a very tongue-in-cheek, like, what's the stupidest way I can make Batman evil?
That's very true. And maybe that's what they were going for.
And maybe it's an unintentional, like, I legitimately want to write this story and it turns out it's stupid. But I could be wrong, but they read to me intentionally, like, what's the dumbest thing I could make Batman be evil as?
Yeah.
I actually, for that reason, I enjoyed it, because I kind of liked the meta, like, we're making fun of our own event sort of thing. Especially because I think the Darkest Night thing is so stupid. Part of me feels like Scott Snyder kind of is acknowledging a little bit that it's kind of dumb too. So I kind of appreciate, so you get the like serious, like, I'm the Darkest Knight. And then you get all these other ones like, yeah, but what if he was an evil dinosaur? And what if he was an evil monster truck? Like, the monster truck story is not good. It doesn't tell a story at all. It exists for two pages is the best way I can put it.
Yep.
But I don't know. The more of those ones after the Robin one that I read, I was like, man, it feels a lot like they are making fun of this concept, and I kind of like it. I didn't necessarily like the stories that much, because a lot of them felt like they were barely trying, but I liked the idea of sort of like poking fun at how ridiculous you can make that concept. Because the first time, the other thing is, you have to remember, we've already read this before with the last Dark Knight thing, the last metal thing, you know what I mean?
Right.
We read those. What if Batman was an evil Aquaman? What if Batman was an evil Wonder Woman? We read those. And so this one feels more like, okay, but what if we did that, but it's dumb? The only other thing I wanted to talk about briefly with this is I enjoyed the Robin story. And I know you and I feel very differently, I feel like, about the artist, because I like that artist. And I know you've disliked their work before. It didn't feel in line with the Robin King that we've actually seen in Snyder's comic, though.
It didn't, did it?
And I don't know if they were just meant to fill in the blank there, that, like, he's in control of his faculties there, and then he meets the Batman Who Laughs and sort of gets twisted more into what we see. I don't know. That was the only thing. I quite enjoyed that story, but it didn't. I was like, that's not the same character, because the other one literally couldn't talk.
Right, so... Unless they're bringing in a new character, have we been introduced to the Robin King in the new metal run yet?
Yeah, right. Yeah, remember in the second one, the Darkest Knight wakes up in his new body, he kills everybody else.
Oh yeah, that's right. Robin. But we didn't have that much interaction with him, so.
No, you just get the Robin going crow crow crown.
Oh yeah, that's right. Crow crow crown. Yeah, maybe they'll explain that more in detail. But this Robin seemed to be a lot more intelligent.
That's what I'm saying. I was like, this is a frankly superior version of that character. So I don't know. I don't know if we're going to see it revert back to more like this that we just read, which would be nice, or if it's just going to keep going down the like sort of mindless drone that the Batman has created.
Yeah, I guess we'll just have to wait and see on that. And one last thing before we move on. That Bat Baby story was ridiculous.
Like I said, if you read it tongue-in-cheek, I don't know if it's intended or not, but if you read them tongue-in-cheek, they kind of worked.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Far Sector number 7. So, Joe is battling some armored perps, and we find out that some, I don't even know how to pronounce that race, we find out that some app have taken over biological beings and erased their personalities and memories. We see Joe uses her ring to travel through an electrical network after these artificial perps, and she finds them at the end of the issue, and Joe only has like 6 minutes to get where she's going. But what I really liked is the flashback scene we got with the Guardian that gave Joe her ring, because we find out that the rings that are made for most lanterns are basic things that will overcome fear, and the Guardian gives Joe a ring that operates on a more nuanced willpower required to live with fear, and this is the will that fuels Joe's ring, and they said it spiked lower in terms of absolute power. I just found that really interesting.
I really enjoyed that whole sequence because it didn't reinvent the wheel, so to speak. Like the information we get about the normal Green Lantern ring is what we already know, right? They're building off of established Green Lantern lore. And then we kind of learned the uniqueness of this ring. But I found it interesting. I liked the fact that at its peak, it's not as powerful as a Green Lantern ring, but that it is, in theory, capable. I sort of took it like on average, it can be better. I kind of liked that idea because then it doesn't read like a fan fiction, right? It doesn't read like a, yeah, but my character's like this, but better. It's sort of like, in some ways it's better, but in other ways it's not, and it's really how you use it. I really liked that concept.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
The plot itself getting really interesting because obviously we knew something was up within the city. There was the brief tease that maybe this alien race was back, but we could see that, as we suspected, it's something, there's some nefarious plot on that world already that already exists on that world that's going on.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that these digital beings are not ultimately the villains behind it either. And I'm curious who it'll get traced back to ultimately.
I am too. This is a really good title. I've been really enjoying it just because it's different.
I agree. And they've done such a really incredible job building this world up. Because none of this existed before this comic. Right, other than the Green Lantern itself, but they've created this entire world, and it just they've done such a good job that a lot of the things they say, you're just sort of like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Like it works within the world that they've built. Obviously, we need to see how the story ends, which might determine like if it's able to be another story that can be told or not. But provided that the character survives, I would love to read another volume of this.
Yeah, it's just really good. Right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Justice League number 50. And I have to admit, Cletus, I was not very excited to read this more of this story. We see the Justice League was able to fend off the Verdum, but the Justice League still bickering about what to do with this people. And it's not until the Verdum show up a second time that the story actually gets interesting. Because we find out that the Empress was behind the whole thing, luring the Justice League to her planet and starting the war with the Verdum. And she was trying to fool the two factions into begging her to rule over them. It was interesting that Wonder Woman figured out her plan when she used the Lasso of Truth on Batman. I liked how Wonder Woman and Batman kind of tricked the Empress into incriminating herself. And how Wonder Woman was able to unite the two children into a better way of thinking. So when I started off reading this, I wasn't that into the story, but it did get interesting towards the end.
I have conflicting feelings with this issue. First off, I found it odd that they labeled this a special extra length 50th issue. It was like, but it's a story about, like, it's just continuing a story they were already telling that is definitely not, like, a culmination story. So I thought that was odd. And then there was just so much. I understand why, if you're trying to finish the story in one issue, why it needed to be the length that it was, because they crammed a lot. I liked some of the ideas. Like, I liked you know, ultimately the way they were able to solve the problem. And then there was just, I don't know, there were other things, like the sort of double switcheroo where like, ho ho, the Emperor's tricked you. Ho ho, no you didn't. Batman tricked you. And it was like, okay. There was a lot of convenience, I thought. And for as long of an issue as it was, it felt like there was a lot of like pulling things out of the blue to explain what just happened. I don't know if you got that a little bit.
Yeah, like, I mean, it wasn't the greatest story to me overall.
It was just sort of like, oh, surprise. Like, not that you could tell it was obvious that the story was really trying to emphasize that something was wrong with Batman. Like, they couldn't have telegraphed that more intentionally. And then they're like, it's surprising. And then, oh, surprise, Wonder Woman actually knew it the whole time. And then, oh, and actually we've solved the problem and we're leaving. I thought that was the one I think that got to me the most. The Wonder Woman trick thing was like, it felt like normal superhero, like we've already solved the problem, we just didn't let the reader know. Convenient storytelling, and that's fine. But it was then the like sort of hand wave, and we've also solved the problem on the planet entirely at the same time because we made these two people get along, and that's literally all it took somehow to unite an entire planet that's hated each other for millennia. They just, so you know what I mean? Like, they just sort of hand waved it. They like defeated the villain, and they're just sort of like, and the problem solved, and we leave. I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess I feel frustrated because I was really intrigued. As I've said before, talking about this storyline, I'm intrigued by the idea of the story. The execution of it was not particularly great throughout the entire story.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Strange Adventures number 4. The issue opens up with Adam Strange leading the Helotate against the Pict. Suddenly, the Zeta Beam zaps Adam Strange back to Earth. Now, Adam Strange tries to find a way back to Ran, asking both Green Lantern and Superman for help. Now, Hal Jordan is unable to help him because the Guardians have commanded that the Green Lantern Corps must remain neutral in this conflict. And Superman's not able to help him either because he can't leave Earth because Mongol and the War World are going to be arriving soon. Now, Adam Strange must wait for a week for the Zeta Beam to send him back to Ran, where he finds that the Helotate have been defeated in that battle he had left. And when he meets up with Alana, she tells him the Helotate have gathered at the Long Sea in the millions and are waiting for their leader. Now we see Mr. Terrific has arrived on Ran, and he's told that he would have full access to all documents, but he's told the PIC files are beyond the comprehension of Ran's most advanced machines. And when Mr. Terrific asked for those files, he's denied, even though he's learned the PIC language on the flight to Ran. I thought that was funny. Now during the night, Mr. Terrific is surrounded by armed people stating that he's under arrest, and Mr. Terrific's T-spheres defend him. Now, Mr. Terrific confronts Sardath about the PIC files, and once he confronts him about those files, he asks him where his granddaughter is, and of course he gets smacked. And what I liked was Mr. Terrific smacks Sardath back.
It's fair play.
Yep, I like that. Now, when Mr. Terrific returns home, he finds Alana sitting on his couch, smoking a cigarette, and telling him that it's time to be done with the investigation. Really, really interesting issue, and I'm very intrigued what is going on.
This was so good, Drew. Like, oh my gosh. The setup of the first issue was so promising of, like, getting these alternating stories. But the way that King keeps kind of building this mystery up, like as soon as you hear that the PICT files aren't available because nobody could possibly translate them, you're like, well, that's obviously BS.
Yeah.
Like, you just know immediately that something's not right. And it's such a I don't know. It just feels so clever to me to be like, tell, like a way to tell the reader that something isn't right. Man. Like, and then so obviously they're hiding something. What are they hiding? Exactly. I continue to think that there's something with, like, are the picks, like, I would almost question if they're real, but I think they are. But then what's, like, what's the dirty secret with them, right? Because in theory, within this story, they're getting ready to attack Earth next.
Right.
And everybody's praising Adam Strange for being able to defend them for that. And then, so what's the, like, you know what I mean? What's the secret with them? Something's clearly up with them. You know, what we haven't gotten that information there. And obviously, the main mystery, the wife certainly seems like a villain. Is she a villain? Like, is Adam Strange actually up to something? Or is he, like, an innocent bystander in this? I just, man, I'm so intrigued.
I know. It's so interesting. And it does feel like Atlanta's a villain. Is it really Atlanta? That's one thing I've been wondering. It's really, we know nothing about the Picts. So
we know that there's something that we're not learning about them yet. Like,
yeah,
there's definitely going to be some bombshell with that.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's like, they have to be real. So then, like, are they actually not a threat? Were they actually the defenders in that war? Like, I just want to know, like, what's the twist?
Yeah, I've been wondering that too, because if they're not the aggressors, I wonder if this has to do with some sort of some racism kind of story. You know what I mean?
Well, I think that's definitely in play, because King has done a great job already laying the groundwork for that. Like, the way that they describe, you know, the people that don't live within the city, he's talking horribly down to them. Even post, like, in theory, these people helped them win this war against the Picts. Whether that's the truth or not, we don't know. But even with that, when we get to when Mr. Terrific arrives, they're kind of referring to this, like, this chore that they have to deal with these people. So it's, I think it's almost certainly in play. And then also just already what we've seen with Mr. Terrific himself, like, there is definitely some racial stuff going on with the story.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm curious to see how it's going to play out. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, The Terrifics number 29. The issue opens up at Simon Stagg's mansion. Sapphire tells Rex and Plastic Man a story about her father being poisoned and her brother getting blamed for it. And her brother is gone the next day, and she is told never to speak of him again. Now, we see Sebastian shows up at the mansion in the present, and he's able to convince Sapphire that he was wrongly accused of poisoning their dad. And once he has won Sapphire over, he tries to get her to sign a document turning over Terrific Tech to him. Yeah, your true colors are shown there, buddy.
Well, okay, what I found interesting just before we move on is that so the comic opens with her telling the story of her long lost brother, and then he shows up again, and she's immediately like, "You're not him." It was like, what? Why would you tell, like, you just told the story of how your brother disappeared from your life, and then you're like, "No, it's not possible. He just disappeared forever. He couldn't possibly have returned exactly when my dad died. That wouldn't make sense." I found it very odd that she was sort of like absolutely flabbergasted that it was actually her brother, even after telling this story. It was like, come on, for real though? It was like, I guess this is the same person that couldn't figure out that her boyfriend was trying to save her father when his hand was literally stuck inside the man. So I guess not the most observant person.
Guess not. So we have meteorites falling towards the city, and we see the Terrifics and the T-Council are working hard to keep the city safe. Now, when Mr. Terrific realizes there are pieces of his space station, the Terrifics head up to space to find Lobo vandalizing Mr. Terrific's space station with a contract to kill the Terrifics. And of course, at the end of the issue, it is Sebastian who's behind it all. I mean, that was pretty obvious.
So they ultimately did a good job of tying the two plots together. But initially when I was reading this, I was like, what the hell are we doing this comet story for? It just happened in the middle of nowhere. Like, the brother shows up and they're trying to deal with this major development, right? And then all of a sudden, like, oh, comets are out there. We better go stop that. You know what I mean? Like, and again, I know ultimately they tied it together, but initially it felt like such a need to tell a second story for no reason, like we've seen a couple times in some of these recent comics. So I guess I was glad that they ultimately did tie it together, but it still felt disjointed, especially Dr. Stone ultimately joins the villainous team, and it just sort of feels random and not really well developed. It's just sort of like he just begs them to not kill him, and then two panels later he's in the villain lineup pose at the end of the comic.
I know what you mean. We only have one more issue of this comic left. So
I have very much enjoyed this title. I do wish it was going out on a higher note. This is, in my opinion, not been the best story that they've told.
Yeah, but you also got to remember it's not the same creative team that started off the story too.
That's true, but there were some decent ones that we read after Lemire dropped out.
That's true. That's true. But yeah, I know what you mean. And I do hope we get the Terrifics back in some sort of fashion, like maybe a miniseries or something.
Yeah, I agree. I hope they continue as a status, even if they won't necessarily continue as a book. I do hope that that team just sort of continues to exist.
I do too.
At least for a while.
All right, well, let's move on to our last issue for this week, Young Justice number 17. I gotta say, Cletus, I really like this issue a lot, but in the end, it was still Young Justice standing around talking. And the story kind of fell out of place in the overall DC timeline, because this happens right after that, the Action Comics Metropolis Doom War thing that was going on. And this issue just felt like it was behind.
I'm telling you, part of me wonders if Bendis just wrote all this stuff at approximately the same time. And so to him, all the pieces fit together perfectly, right?
Right.
But then when you send it and the way it's actually gotten published, they've been, like you said, totally disjointed. Yes, part of that has been the massive delay caused by the coronavirus, but also, even without that, this would have still come out several months after, even if it was being printed normally.
Yeah, I just thought it was the timeline has just been weird on this.
The other thing that I, like you said, the issue is basically just Young Justice standing and talking, which is the status quo for the comic. But the thing that I thought, and I have to remind myself that I am not the target audience of this book, but it just felt, a lot of it felt so unearned. They keep talking about, you have just such, what a great team you have. Oh my God, I am so jealous of your team. You guys are so good. All we get it from all of the Justice League members individually say it. Like it's said by Superman, Flash, all of them are just like, oh my God, your team. Oh my goodness, it's so good. At what? We haven't actually seen them really do anything. They've stopped one villain.
Yeah. Star Labs.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not saying that it's necessarily false. I like a lot of those characters, but it's just, it feels so unearned. It feels like they're referring to this as if we've read, you know, 50 epic adventures and we've really done so much. And it's one of those issues where it's like, yeah, man, what a great run this has been. And oh my gosh, they really are a good team. Except we haven't read any of that. We've only seen them basically get together, stand around talking about how they used to be a team and how, oh my gosh, look at how many of us there are. And wow, we're a team. And oh my gosh, aren't we such a great team? You're great. Aren't we great? You're great. We're great. We're so great. But they don't do anything.
I did like seeing them get together with their counterparts, Cassie and Wonder Woman, Superman and Connor. I would have loved to have heard what Tim and Batman were talking about, because we didn't get to hear any of that conversation. We just saw the panels of them talking. And I'm like, what are you guys talking about? One thing I did notice was Batman called him Robin.
It also did not seem like it was a... It did not seem like Batman had the same, oh my God, you guys are so great conversation either.
No, it
didn't,
did it?
Based on Tim's reaction. So, at least somebody, maybe somebody pointed out, like, hey, look, maybe you guys should do something once. I don't know. I am sure that's going to be a plot point, is whatever Batman told Tim.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk DC television.
Do you know you could take the Dragon Con report with you wherever you go? Heck, we are even now up on Alexa. Hey, Alexa, play the Dragon Con podcast up on iHeartRadio.
Playing the Dragon Con report from iHeartRadio. Playing the latest episode, the 2020 Dragon Con Report Episode 2.
Howdy, everyone, and welcome to the second episode of the 2020 Dragon Con Report.
Now, how cool is that? Remember, the Dragon Con Report can be found wherever you find podcasts. See you at the show in September.
And we're back. Let's talk Stargirl, Season 1, Episode 11, Shining Knight. In this episode, we see Courtney's father show up at the house, Sam Curtis. Now, Courtney doesn't want to accept the truth that Starman is not her father. She eventually comes downstairs and talks to him, and they eventually go for a walk and end up having breakfast together. And when her father brings Courtney home, they sit on the steps. And he asks Courtney for her locket because he wants to sell it. Now, she gives it to him reluctantly, and when he leaves, we see Courtney crying in Pat's arms. Then we see Pat confront Sam, telling him to never come back. When he makes a snide comment about Barbara, Pat decks him. Now, before we move on, I'm going to have to say you were right, Cletus, because I was expecting a little more tension between Pat and Barbara, but we didn't really get it. They seemed to be on the same team, and you were correct. They rushed it last episode.
Yeah, it was one of those things. Like you pointed out correctly, they led into having an awkward moment between her and Pat. And then, like you mentioned, Icicle comes in and kind of shifts the whole tone of what's going on. But that's the problem. They never, like, you thought that they would get back to that, and I hoped that they would also, but they never did. And so instead, as soon as Icicle walks into her office, effectively, she's fully on the team without questioning or doubting anything. And so we just never get that moment that we should get.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I have to tell you, I was surprised that Courtney's father showed up. I wasn't expecting that to happen that quickly, and it was right at the beginning of the episode. So that answers the question about her father.
Yeah, and I don't think either you or I were surprised that Starman is not actually her dad. The thing that I thought and I also have to give the show a lot of credit. I really love the casting choice that they went with. A, I mean, he played the character well, but B, like, he looks close enough to Joel McHale that you could imagine a blurry photo of him could, you know, look similar.
Yeah, that's
true.
You
know
what
I mean? Like, yeah. They do not look alike necessarily, but they look close enough that a blurry, non-detailed photo that she has in her locket, you could be like, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense.
But on the same thought, though, it reinforces what I said last episode, which is, why the hell did the mom not come out more forcefully and, like, I know for a fact that your dad is not Starman? Because clearly there was never a doubt in her mind, right?
Right.
And yet the show kind of, by having her look up Starman, I guess we're supposed to assume now with the full context that she didn't really know a lot about Starman was or what his deal was. And that's why she was looking him up. But the show definitely wanted you to think that she was like, is he? Is that is that my daughter's dad?
Yeah. They
but
really
she
went
knew.
To play
she clearly
that.
Knew. Why wouldn't, how? What rational human being wouldn't be like, that photo is not your dad. I know him very well. And I can say definitively that that's not him.
Yeah. And it's pretty obvious he was a loser.
Yeah, well, not only that, clearly agreed there, but, like, again, she is shown a picture of the team in which Joel McHale is clearly shown so that you can clearly see who it is, and it is definitely not Court's dad, which we, the audience, don't know at that point, but
she would. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I know
at one point there's one line in the last episode where she's like, that's not your dad, but it's important the way it's delivered. It's like I can't believe this situation is really happening. You know what I mean? Like a denial delivery, right. If that makes sense. I do think it's important the way that that line was not focused on in the scene, but B, it was also delivered in a way that suggested, you know, that maybe like it was not a definitive shutdown. I know without a doubt that that's not your dad.
Yeah. And you know why they didn't do that? They wanted to keep us in the dark about it, the audience.
Well, okay, but I feel like you can do that. I feel like there's a way to do that without the mom not just inexplicably saying, you know, denying that fact. I don't know if that makes sense. I agree with you. You want to keep it keep it a question for the audience, but it also needs to be some level of believability from the other party, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know what you're trying to say.
And then I enjoyed, so the other part of this episode, we finally start to learn more about this universe's version of Shining Knight. It didn't feel like it belonged, if I'm being honest, in this episode. It felt like it was what should have been its own episode, and for whatever reason, these two got thrown in together as one episode because they were so wildly detached. Court's dad comes home, right?
Right.
And that becomes the story. And then all of a sudden, Pat goes to the garage, and that story suddenly becomes about Shining Knight. But then within an hour, Court's back at home, and Pat's already back home. Like, Pat's ability to travel in this show is... Are we sure he's not at speed? Is he the Flash?
He could be.
It was just, I don't know, the timing of the whole thing, it didn't really jive, if that makes sense. Like, you get this totally disconnected Shining Knight story, the story dealing with Court's dad, both of which individually are good stories, and then we get the thing at the end where Court's so doubtful that the staff isn't working, which again, I feel like is something that we needed. I feel like we needed more. There was a lot of, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Drew. I think Johns wrote this episode. And I hate to say it, but it feels a little bit like some of the Shazam titles that we read, where he's trying too hard to tell and introduce. He's trying to spin too many plates at once, where he really wants to introduce all of these ideas. And so he does, but it's only one episode of television. He tried to spin like four different plates. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being really nitpicky like I usually am, but I would have liked... I feel like this episode should and could have been more focused than it was.
Yeah, I think you're nitpicking. I thought I was fine with the two stories going on. Granted, you're right, Pat does seem to zoom around like the Flash, but overall, the series has been pretty good.
I agree. And again... I like all of the individual plot points. I just, none of them are being given room to breathe. Like, we get the full arc of the scummy dad in half an episode. That could have easily been played out longer than that. Because you get the, like, oh, maybe he is a good dad trying to redeem himself. And then the next scene is scummy dad taking the locket to leave. Same thing, you get Sir Justin pops up in the garage. And the next thing, he's already a beloved member of the family in the basement at the end of the episode. Or you get Court's been able to use the staff just fine the whole show. I have no problem with her, the self-doubt stopping her from using the staff. It's a storyline I think is interesting. It's good. It gets introduced, you know, as a sort of background part of the story. And then it's the major conclusion of the episode. It makes it you feel like the episode was really about her ability to use the staff, and really it wasn't. It wasn't about that at all until it was for the last, like, 10 minutes of the episode.
Yeah, there's only two more episodes left of the season. And maybe that was part of the problem, too, because they were probably told, you got 13 episodes to tell your story, and They just had to cram some of the stuff in.
I think there's something to be said for restraint, though. Like, as much as I like the Shining Knight character, and I think it's interesting that he's included in this, I'm pretty sure, correct me, you tell me if you think differently, that we're not going to get much of a payoff for that this season.
Probably not.
So why not, you know, you can introduce the character, right? But why focus on it then?
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
A limited real estate, so to speak. And we're definitely not going to get a full satisfying seven soldiers story, which is fine. I'm not complaining about that. This season has got its own satisfying story. But if that's the case, then maybe don't spend half of the episode setting up a seven soldiers story that you're not going to tell this season.
I don't know. I know the next episode's called Stars and Stripe. So I don't know if he's going to factor in or not. I mean, if he doesn't factor in, then I agree with you. It's a waste of space. But if he does, then...
I imagine he will end up... I assume he will be a part of, like, the superhero lineup that we'll see. You know, we'll get that, like, either slow-mo or really dramatic. They'll hold the pose.
Yeah.
I'm confident that we will see him in his janitor's uniform holding a sword. There's no question in my mind that we'll see that. But is it, you know, I just quite like, there's a very interesting story to be told there that we can kind of see lurking under the surface between what happened in the past between that team and Dr. Ido. But I don't think we're going to get that this season. And that's fine. Again, I'm not complaining about that. But then I think you can introduce the concept, but not in a limited season like we're talking about. I think you maybe don't dedicate that much time, if I'm being honest.
All right. Well, I'm curious. The next two episodes are going to wrap things up. And I keep seeing stuff online saying how good it was. So I'm even more excited to watch the episodes.
I am excited, too. I want to be clear. I know I was nitpicking here, but I did enjoy the episode, and I am enjoying the season a lot. I just always strive to see how the show could get even better, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it is only the first season, so... And with a lot of shows,
the big thing with this show, I have enjoyed this season a lot. I hope we see a similar show next season. Normally, I'm not that worried about that, but given the massive status quo change in terms of production and all that, I'm nervous.
Yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week. Doom Patrol, Season 2, Episode 7, Dumb Patrol. Well, we were wondering how Cliff was going to get home from outer space last episode. And if memory serves, you were correct, Cletus. Cliff falls to Earth.
I was not. I have to admit, I was not correct. It was like maybe half right. I thought that he might fall back to the moon or whatever moon, like we agreed it wasn't maybe right quite the moon, but whatever. I thought he might fall back to that. Where the other spaceship was.
I thought I remember you saying that you thought Cliff might fall back to Earth.
I may have also said that as in a second option.
Oh, okay.
I'm just trying to be honest with it. I certainly put out the suggestion that he might fall to the other planet and get back on this other ship that was there.
All right. Well, we have Cliff falls to Earth crashing through a billboard featuring an autobiography by the animal vegetable mineral man. That was freaking hilarious.
It's one of those things, it's been long enough since the first season came out that, like, in the back of my head I remember a lot of this stuff, but like I did not remember that character existed. And then I saw that sign, I was like, oh my god, yes.
So we see Cliff has to walk back to Doom Manor because nobody wants to pick up a hitchhiking robot. Now the whole time Cliff is walking home, he's repeating to himself that he's going to kill Niles over and over and over. And Cliff probably has the blue ribbon for the most F-bombs in an episode in this episode.
Do you think that's how they pitched it to Brandon Fraser? They're like, we want you on the show, and to convince you, we know you really like to say the F-bomb. I don't know that he does, but we know you really like to say that. We're going to have that be like 80% of your dialogue. And he's like, oh my God, I'm in. Let's do this.
Oh man, it's been a lot more than last season too. And I thought, an episode, a couple episodes ago, we had a lot of them, but this one I think takes the cake. Now, eventually his legs stop working, and lucky for him, somebody comes by and lets him make some phone calls. However, he has to do some shout-outs for each use of the phone. And when Cliff finally gets home, Clara is waiting for him. We find out that Niles has sent her a VHS of his confession of what Cliff did. That was the most surprising thing, I think, was Clara waiting there at Doom Mansion for him. Especially after that phone call he made to her.
Yeah, see, I was going to say, especially after he blew the phone call the way he did.
Yes.
I'm really curious to see what we get with that next episode.
Yeah, because maybe she hadn't heard it yet. Niles lands his ship in the northern Yukon Valley, and he leaves Dorothy asleep on the ship and goes searching for Dorothy's mother. He finds where she lives and tries to talk to her, but instead the Candlemaker shows up and says that the mother cannot hear him. And he adds that Dorothy belongs with Candlemaker. He explains that the mother is gone and the father will soon join her. Now we see Niles calls on Kipling and tells him that this is that call. And he must give Kipling the where and the when, and he will make sure it gets done. The what is not giving to the viewers, but I'm guessing he's ordering the death of Dorothy.
That definitely seems to be the implication.
Yeah.
Which seems dark, but also very feasible, given what we know that Niles has done, and also just the show. So.
Yeah, for sure.
Man. And this, I thought this was the one, obviously we knew the Candlemaker was the threat of the season, but to me it's been somewhat of a question in terms of like how connected to Dorothy is the Candlemaker, if that makes sense. I know we talked about this a couple episodes ago where it was, is the Candlemaker its own, is it its own evil entity, or is it, you know, a reflection of something within Dorothy? And I felt like this episode was a major step towards it suggesting that it's its own evil entity that's gotten its claws into Dorothy.
Yeah, but it also, they also stated that it came from the mother also when Dorothy was born. So I was wondering, is this kind of like maybe a brother or something? Or I wasn't sure.
Or some sort of like ancient evil, you know, thing that their people had dealt with. So just, I don't know, in some way, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that could be too. So
very curious. We're certainly going to get more with it, but this was, I was very intrigued just by the little bit that we got, because obviously we've seen some incredibly antagonistic things from the Candlemaker. Don't get me wrong, but I felt like this one was the first sort of gauntlet thrown, if that makes sense. Like, yes, we saw him horrifyingly, apparently kill, you know, parts of Jane's subconscious, but I felt like this one was the one that was really threw the gauntlet down, like, I'm the villain of this story.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. All right, we get a mysterious package that is delivered to the Doom Mansion, and even though it says, do not open all over it, they are compelled to open it. And it's the painting that Mr. Nobody was supposed to be captured in. Now, we see Kipling show up wearing a butt mask. And he explains that the painting is infested with scants and has them watch a video about scants. We find out that scants place bad ideas in your head, and when you are infected with them, the only way to stop the scant infection is to kill the queen. And they also point out the fact that the bad ideas can lead to death. They all decide it's a good idea to go into the painting and try to help kill the queen. And inside the painting, they see the scants, who are kind of creepy but hilarious at the same time. And of course, they get captured. And luckily for them, Miranda was unaffected by the scants and uses her powers to kill the queen bee. In the underground, Jane realizes that another of her personalities has gone missing. And when she goes to her station to check on her, her station is closed. Very curious about what that means.
And we remember we also saw her strongly encourage successfully that they disposed of the other two bodies down the well when there was a lot of question whether that was necessary in the first place.
Right.
So I'm very curious. We know in the Queen scant suggests that there is some bad idea lurking under there. Is she eliminating the other personalities so that it's just her?
You mean the Jane personality? Or somebody else? Or Miranda?
No, Miranda. I don't know. We know she's obviously up to something. What I thought was really fascinating that the episode did is that she's you can see she's like an exasperated member of the gang. Like, you guys are being morons. Stop this. But that you know that there's something also sinister going on underneath.
Right.
I thought that the way it was really interesting, where like on the surface, her dealing with the team, she's not doing anything nefarious. But you know that whatever she's doing in the underground, that there's something not right. My guess, and I don't know if I have no idea if this will be accurate or not. My guess is maybe she's trying to eliminate the underground in a sense, so to speak. So it becomes, she is not just the primary, she is the only, that it's just her.
That could very well be. That's actually an interesting story in itself.
One thing I very much enjoyed about the scant storyline in general was I feel like a lot of the time Negative Man is the straight man of the team, so to speak. I know he's gay, but you know, but like comedy wise.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I feel like so often that's how they play the character, and it works. But I really enjoyed. It felt like I enjoyed that he was the funny one, where you get like him and the teleporting personality. I can't remember her name. They dress up as doctors as if that somehow disguises them.
I know. That was freaking
And then he
hilarious.
Later introduces himself to the scants as Dr. Larry Trainer. It was so funny, and it was just so refreshing because I feel like we don't get him as the comedic presence in the scene. So that was I found that really refreshing.
Yeah, it was, because a lot of times he's Mr. Negative.
Yeah.
Go
and
figure,
it works.
Huh?
I mean, there's, to be fair, there are a lot of scenes that are funny, which he is playing, you know, playing as the straight man. But like, it's so rare that we get him as he is the actively comedic one in the scene. So that was honestly one of my favorite parts of the whole episode, was the whole hospital sequence, and then the callback a little bit later, and then he introduces himself as a doctor again.
We can't.
It's just the bad ideas in general. They almost performed surgery with a blowtorch.
I know.
You guys are already in your uniforms.
We can't skip over Rita's story, because in order to perfect her craft, we see Rita goes to visit the beekeeper to learn more about her. And Rita and the beekeeper end up having a few beers together, and Rita ends up confessing about problems with her mother. Now the beekeeper tells her that when she gets mad, she yells at her bees. So that's exactly what Rita does. And what I really liked was, on her way home, we see Rita actually use her powers to stop a mugging. In the bee suit. I know. That was so freaking hilarious. And if she had a cheesy line, too. I'm sorry, did that sting? So I like this scene with Rita in this episode, because you know, we basically see her basically get over her issues with her mother, and with that, the ability to start, we see the beginnings of her becoming a superhero. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, and very exciting. I think both of us have been pretty excited to see her take the next steps. Really, really excited to see where that goes with her character.
All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah, so I know I just spent most of our time talking about Stargirl, that maybe we shouldn't have focused on Shining Knight, but that being said, if you don't know that much about that character, or you know about him and you want to read more, the first issue that he appears in is Adventure Comics number 66, which came out in 1941, so he's a pretty old character. And then you can also see him, if you're wanting for like seeing him in other media, he also features in several episodes of Justice League Unlimited.
All right, and for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about the science of Dr. Manhattan. I came across this article today. It was called Watchmen, the Science of Dr. Manhattan, where they actually have an article with the physics professor who consulted on the movie, talking about the science behind Dr. Manhattan. And the article was really interesting. And I posted it up on our Facebook group, so check it out. All right, well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach your feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message. Or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, coming up next week, we're going to have Dark Knight's Death Metal, Detective Comics, Justice League Odyssey, Superman, The Green Lantern Season 2, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Earth 1 Volume 2, which I'm very excited to talk about. And we will be reviewing both Stargirl Episode 12 and 13. So we'll have the season finale of Stargirl next week. No Doom Patrol, we'll put that off for a week, and you'll find out why. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.